The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Good evening and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Every year at this time, we try to get some of Father Christmas's precious time to answer questions from some local children. And this year we were once again very lucky to speak to him on the phone. Lydia was joined in the studio by Lyra, Avani, Penelope, Seb and Asha, who posed some interesting and sometimes awkward questions to the big man himself. If you listen carefully, you'll even hear some contributions from Mrs. Christmas, and you'll even hear the occasional snuffle from his reindeer. So let's hear how that amazing phone call went.
Can you hear it ringing?
Hello, hello, we're trying to get through to Father Christmas. Is that you, Father Christmas?
Yes, it is. Hello.
Well, it's so lovely to have you on The Parents Show. And Father Christmas, we have a studio full of lovely children with great questions for you.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, it's so nice to be here. I wish I could be there in person with you, but it's lovely to be talking to you down the phone.
Well, we'll send you some photos of all the children in the studio afterwards. But first, they're going to all introduce themselves.
Good.
I'm Lyra.
And tell Father Christmas how old you are and what school you go to.
I'm 5 and I go to Fleetville Infants.
Oh, Fleetville Infants. I know that school very well. I've visited there before. It's very nice to meet you.
I saw him there.
You saw it, you? Oh, that's wonderful.
I'm Avani. I'm 9 years old and I go to Abbots Hill School.
Avani, so nice to meet you. Thank you for coming along. I'm looking forward to your questions.
My name's Penelope and I'm 6 years old and I go to Aboyne Lodge.
Penelope, Aboyne Lodge, what another lovely school. All lovely schools, aren't they? Oh, well, it's very nice to meet you, Penelope.
I'm Sebastian.
And who else have we got?
I'm Sebastian and I'm 6 years old and I go to Fleetball Incense.
Sebastian, very, very nice to meet you. Nice to meet you all. Is there anybody else? Was that it?
I'm Asher, and I'm 7.5 years old, and I go to Aboyne Lodge School.
Asher, very nice to meet you as well. 7.5, very good age.
Brilliant. So, Father Christmas, they've got a list of questions each, and they're dying to ask you.
Oh, wonderful. Who's first?
Me, Lyra. How do you make all the presents in a time?
Ah, well, that's a very, very good question, and it's one that lots of people ask me. And the answer is magic. She wouldn't be able to do it without magic, but I've got magic powers. I can't make my magic work in every way, but I have Christmas magic powers. So the magic powers I have are to make all the presents, and then to deliver them all on one night on Christmas Eve to all the little boys and all the little girls all around the world. That's my magical power. No one else could do it. I have no rivals. There's nobody else apart from me who could do it. Isn't that wonderful? That's why it's my job, my great responsibility to do it. But magic is the answer. It's a very good question.
Brilliant. Now, Avani, would you want to ask your first question?
Do you listen to the radio when you're on your sleigh and what's your favourite song at the moment?
Well, now that's a very good question. And you know what? That's actually not one that I've been asked at all. But do you know what? I don't listen to the radio when I'm on. I would like to be able to, but we don't get very good reception when we're whizzing around in the open air. So do you know what I have to listen to? I have to listen to the reindeers singing. And they're not very good singers. So that's what I have to listen to all the time, is the reindeers grumbling away with their growly voices. Or some of them have quite high voices, actually, but most of them have quite growly voices. And they sing away. I have no idea what they're singing, but they make a sort of chuntering noise as we're whizzing around the sky. but I'd love to be able to listen to the radio. Can't, though. Can't. Afraid not.
Brilliant. Penelope, you're next up.
How old are you?
Ah. Oh, Penelope, these are such good questions. Well, Penelope, the thing about that is, I don't know. I've forgotten. I'm so old. I'm as old as the world. I've always been here. And I just am, you see. So it's very difficult to know how old I am. But I must be thousands of years old. I mean, thousands. Can you imagine? I Christmases come and Christmases go, generations go by. I gave presents to your mummy and daddy and your granny and grandpa, your nans and your uncles and your great uncles and their parents before them and all the generations back into time. It was always me. I did it year after year after year, so I'm extremely old. And you could tell that because I've got white beard, you see, a white beard and white hair, but I've been like this for as long as I can remember. I can't remember when. I do know what I used to have a red beard when I was very little. But it was a problem that, you see, well, not very little, but, you know, when I was a younger man, I had a red beard. But the problem there was, you see, that I have, as you may know, you may have seen pictures of me, at least around Christmas time, I wear a red cloak. And so with a red beard and a red cloak, and I have a rather red nose as well. So it was very difficult to I just looked like a traffic light. I was just red. I was just red completely all over. So I rather like my white beard. I'd rather like my white beard, but I've no idea how old I am.
Excellent. Now, Seb, what's your first question for Father Christmas?
How does the reindeer fly when only the reindeer's at the front and not at the back?
How do the reindeers fly when they're at the front and not at the back? Well, the answer to how the reindeers fly is also magic. So the rest of the year, the reindeers, Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen and Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen and also Rudolph, the rest of the year, the reindeers can't fly. But on Christmas Eve, I sprinkle them with some magic dust and that gives them the power to fly. The power to fly at the speed of light, to be everywhere at once, whirling me around, chuntering their songs away and stopping me from listening to the radio. So that's the answer. And then they do pull my sleigh from the front. You're quite right. So I get dragged behind as we whiz around the world.
Brilliant. Thanks a million, Father Christmas. Now, Asher, over to you.
Father Christmas, how do you travel around the world so quickly?
Yes, well, I'm going to get a little bit boring because I'm going to start giving you the same answer to all these questions. You see, because it's another very good question. They're all extremely good questions. But the answer is, it's not. So the way you have to think about it, I mean, the answer is magic. But the way you have to think about it, you see, and this is what's very difficult for people to understand, is that it's I can be in many places at once, you see. Because if you think about it, however fast I was, I never, ever have the time to go down everybody's chimney or to go through people's windows and deliver all the presents to all little boys and all little girls all over this country and all over the other countries of the world. I never have time to do it in one night if I had to do it one after the other. But I don't, you see. I can appear on Christmas Eve in many, many places at once. And that's my secret. Oh. I don't normally tell people that. Well, that's my secret, though. I can appear in many places at once. So it's not really a question of how fast I can travel. It's a question of how many places I can be in at the same time. There we are. Now you know my secret.
Well done, Asher. You got Father Christmas to answer a question he's never answered before. Well done. Dad.
If I spot you, will you still give me presents?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I will. I definitely will. You don't need to worry about that. I will certainly still give you presents, even if you spot me. Now, it might be, though, a good idea for you to go to bed at a sensible time on Christmas Eve. So you probably won't see me because you'll be fast asleep when I come. And it'd be a good idea to have a good night's sleep on Christmas Eve because Christmas Day is always a very busy day, isn't it? So you should go to bed early when you're told to go to bed on Christmas Eve. But if by any chance you happen to see me, or if you catch a glimpse of me in the sky whizzing along, if you see the reindeers and you see a sparkle of stars following, then I wouldn't worry. You'll certainly still have a present. Certainly still have a present.
If you were a child again, what would you put on your own Christmas list?
Oh! Now that's a... Goodness me, I don't think anyone's ever asked me that before. That's an interesting question. If I was a child again, and I did, it's been so long since I was a child, what would I put on my Christmas list? Well, well, I think I would put on my Christmas list. Well, you see, when I was little, I used to really, really like railways. And so I think I would put on a train set. That's what I would put on my Christmas list. Yes, a little model train. That's what I would put on. Yes, I might get one anyway, actually. Although, you know, I also like getting food. I like getting a Satsuma, perhaps a little bit of chocolate, something like that. I'm very partial to, you know, Christmas food. So I'd probably put those on my Christmas list as well. Have you got a Christmas list?
Yes.
Oh, that was a yes from everybody, I think. Brilliant. Penelope, come on over to the microphone.
When you were a child, did you deliver presents?
Yes. Oh, these are, goodness me, these are good questions. Yeah. I have been delivering presents for as long as I can remember. There was never a time when I didn't. So I don't really remember my childhood very well, and that's probably why I find it so hard to answer the last question. But yes, I've always delivered presents. When I was young, when I was middly, and now that I'm old, and I'm getting older and older and older, and I've always delivered presents. That's really the whole point of me. That's what I do every year, and I couldn't stop, and I never want to stop, and I never will, and I always have.
How do you get the present to everyone's house? It's only 24 hours.
Yes, well, it's very, very hard, but that's where I use my magic, you see. So I cast a magic spell, which is actually when I fling my arm out, there's little stars come out of my hand. And the reindeer have this magic, and it only lasts for a night, you see. It only lasts for a night. Well, as you say, 24 hours, really, because when it's night here, it's day in Australia, and when it's night there, it's day here. So you're right. It's 24 hours altogether. It's a very frenetic time. But with that magic, the reindeers can fly. We can be in many places at once, which is not something that human beings can do. And I can travel faster than the fastest space rocket or the fastest airplane or the fastest thing you can imagine. I can just be in lots and lots of places at once. And it's because I've got this magic, but I can only use it on Christmas Eve. It's the only time I can use my magic. And I don't know why. I've tried it other times, by the way. Sometimes in the middle of summer, I try just to see whether I can do it. And I go, crap! But I try as hard as I can to cast a spell, and it never works. It doesn't work in the middle of summer. So I have to do it. I can only do it on Christmas Eve. It's just the way I am.
Brilliant. Now, Asher.
Father Christmas, what do you do for the rest of the year when it's not December?
These really are splendid questions. Yes. Well, now, Christmas is my favourite time of year. It's also my busiest time of year. Now, you can well imagine, I don't know how you feel in January, but I always feel rather depressed in January. Because after all the excitement of Christmas and the decorations come down and the tree comes down and the house goes back to being all a bit drab again and it's usually dark and grey and I don't like that time of year at all, and I'm always really... Just a bit. But then I think to myself, well, There's always next Christmas. Always next Christmas, there's always another Christmas. So I start preparing, and that cheers me up. So the answer to the question is that I spend all year preparing for Christmas. And also, if you live in the North Pole like I do, there's actually quite a lot of sunshine. It's always very, very cold, but there's also quite a lot of sunshine. So I get more sunshine than you probably do in St. Albans. And that cheers me up a little bit. But it also means there's always a little bit Christmassy, you see. There's usually almost always snow, and there's almost always a bit of sunshine. And so it feels almost like Christmas. If I close my eyes and imagine it, almost like Christmas all year round. And even though you take all your Christmas decorations down, and I take lots of my Christmas decorations down, I'm still thinking about Christmas, and I'm still making Christmassy things, and I'm making plans for the next year. And so that's what keeps me going, really. But I do have a summer holiday, of course. Always have a summer holiday. Always go on holiday to a sunny place, to a beach. You know, do you ever go on holiday in the summer to somewhere sunny with a beach?
Yes.
Well, you might see me there. You wouldn't recognise me, though, because I don't go in my big red cloak and my woolly hat and things like that. But so if you ever see a large man with a jolly face and a white beard when you're on a holiday, you might want to, it might be me.
Now, thanks a million, Father Christmas. Back to Lyra. What's your next question, Lyra?
Please, can I meet Rudolph one day because he's my favourite reindeer?
I won't tell him that. It'll go to his head. He likes to, and the other reindeers will get very jealous. They get very jealous of Rudolph anyway, because he gets all the attention, all the songs about him, you know. Well, I don't know whether you can. I can promise that you'll be able to meet him, Lyra, because I won't be at your. I'll be at your house for such a short amount of time to give you presents, and obviously I've got to get all the way around the world, and you'll be asleep. So I'm not sure how we can do it. If one day you can ever come to visit me when it isn't Christmas time in the North Pole, then that would probably be the best time to visit Rudolph. He's a very nice. Sorry, he's talking over there. He's sort of grumbling away. Yes. We're talking about you, Rudolph. Oh, yes, one of your fans. Yeah. Yes, looking very pleased with himself. He's snuffling away in the corner. Yes. But I'm so pleased you like him. Yeah. Certainly couldn't do without him.
What do you do for present breaks on the way?
Oh. For breaks on the way, when I'm delivering presents on Christmas Eve, what do I do when I need a break? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Well, what I'm very much like is that sometimes people are so kind as to leave me a mint pie or a piece of Christmas cake or something to eat. Sometimes even a glass of wine or a glass of whiskey or something like that, you see. And when they do, that's very, very nice, because obviously it is very hard work, the whole Christmas Eve business. And so that's very nice. I always stop and have something to eat if people offer them to me. Sometimes people even leave carrots for the reindeer. Yes, they leave them for you, don't they? Yes, they're all snuffling there in expectation. Yes, so that's very nice. So that's what I do, really. I have breaks when people leave me things. Yes, so do think about that. You know, on Christmas Eve, you know, if you you maybe ask your mummy or your daddy or somebody, some grown-up in the house, if they've got some food to leave for me. I'd be very grateful if you did.
Fantastic. Thanks, Father Christmas. Penelope, you're next. Come on over to the microphone.
How many people are there in the world?
I've absolutely no idea how many people there are in the world. There are so many people, and it makes it incredibly difficult for me, because you know I've got to give presents for many of them, and it's just a terrible business. I think there's about 8 billion people in the entire 8 billion, the whole world. Extraordinary number. That's why I have to use magic to get around them all.
Great. Thanks very much, Penelope. That was a great question. Seb, what's your next question for Father Christmas?
What does the elves do through the year when it's not Christmas?
What do the elves do? Well, and these are all, gosh, these are all excellent questions. Well, now, if you ask me what the elves do for the rest of the year, I would say not very much. They're quite lazy, the elves. But I think if you ask them what they would do, they would say they are preparing for Christmas. And they are making some of the toys, and they're mapping out where we have to go. There's a whole army of them. There are enormous number of elves I have here. And they do, in fairness, do a lot of the kind of backroom logistics work. You know, they make sure that I've got the right presents in the right bags for the right people to put in the right stockings. I mean, it's amazingly complicated. I mean, imagine how many people I've got to deal with. This is a big operation. Can't do it all myself. Mrs. Christmas does a lot of the work. Hey, I do most of it. Yes, sorry, she's in the background there. Yes, she says she does most of it. She thinks I'm just the front man.
Well, you are the front man. You're the one who does the, you know, you take all the glory. I do all the work.
Yeah, so that's Miss thank you very much, dear. Yeah, so Mrs. Christmas is Mrs. Christmas does do a lot of the, yes, dear, yes, you do a lot of the work. But the elves are work. Yes, I'm being, yes, there's all the elves are looking at me now. Yes, the elves work very hard all through the year. Yes, you do.
You don't work. You sit around and eat. Yes, you don't do lots of, yes.
Sorry, I'm getting barracked here a bit. Yes. Awkward questions, these. Very, very good questions. Bit awkward for me to answer.
Fantastic. Thanks, Father Christmas. Asher, have you got another question for Father Christmas?
Father Christmas, what is your favourite Christmas song?
What is my favourite Christmas song, did you say? Did I hear that right?
Yes.
Oh, well, I like Jingle Bells. I must admit I'm quite fond of,
about Rudolph. You like Rudolph?
Yes, I do. Yeah, Mrs. Christmas just reminded me. Yes, I like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I hear that quite a lot on Christmas Eve. It's actually the song that the reindeers mostly chunter away as they're whizzing around the world. So probably those are the ones. Yes.
Yeah. And what's your favourite Christmas song, Asher?
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, that is a lovely one. Yes, that's a very nice one.
So, well, we have another round of questions. Lyra, have you got another one for Father Christmas?
Yes. Does anyone get you a present?
Oh, what a love. Oh, how nice of you to think of. What a nice question to ask.
Oh, what's the answer? I do, don't I?
Yes. Mrs. Christmas gives me a present every year, and I give her one as well. Yes, so I do get one present. Yes. And I get, and sometimes, as I've said, people are very, very kind, and they leave me mince pies or pieces of Christmas cake or other nice things to eat, and that's very nice as well. So I do get one. I have to say, it is always the same present every year. It's a pair of socks. That's what I get every year.
I knit them myself, though, don't I?
Yes. Mrs. Christmas reminds me that she knits them herself. But yes, pair of socks. Generally red, sometimes with some Christmas decorations, pieces of ivy, things like that on them. That's what I get every year. And I'm very happy to get them too.
Avani, what about you? What's your next question? Do you have another one for Father Christmas? No, you're all done. How about you, Penelope?
What's your favourite Christmas movie?
Oh, that's a lovely question. Now, in the rest of the year, when I'm not rushing round, I do sometimes have time to watch the movies, and perhaps you won't be surprised to know that my favourite movies are all Christmas movies. So I would say that I'm extremely fond of any movie that has Father Christmas in it, which you know there are quite a lot. What's your favourite Christmas movie?
Penelope, if you come over to this microphone and you can, Father Christmas will be able to hear you. What's your favourite Christmas movie?
Christmas Chronicles.
Oh, I don't think I've seen that. Does that have Father Christmas in it?
I've given it some thought. Does anybody know? Is Father Christmas in Christmas Cross? Yeah, Avani's nodding. Yeah, and yeah, Penelope's confirmed. Definitely he's in it.
A girl and then a boy, and then the older boy, Santa has to go into jail. Then he does a party with the people in jail.
Oh, dear me. Oh, I must watch that. That's very, very exciting.
Brilliant. So now we know, well, Father Christmas in prison. I hope that doesn't happen to you, Father Christmas.
Dear me, I hope I can be that good.
So, Seb, have you got a question, a last question for Father Christmas?
No.
You're all good. How about you, Asher?
Yes. Do you get any presents on Christmas Day?
Yes, I do. I get a present from Mrs. Christmas. Yes, I get my pair of socks.
And you're very grateful for them, aren't you?
Yes, I get my pair of socks from Mrs. Christmas. Yes, and that's what I get. Yes, and then plus all the mince pies and the Christmas cake that people very kindly leave me.
So it sounds like Father Christmas definitely likes getting, can we say, mince pies?
Yes. I've mentioned that enough.
Yes. Mince pies and Christmas cake.
Christmas cake, yes. Christ. Or any kind of Christmas food, really. Yes.
Brilliant. Great. So, do you want to all say a huge thank you and happy Christmas to Father Christmas?
Thank you.
Well, this has been so enjoyable for me. Such a treat for me to meet you and to answer your questions. I'm just sorry I can't be there in person, but I wish you all the very warmest and coziest and most sparkly Christmas there has ever been. I hope you have a lovely time with your families. If you're going to see your nan and your granddad and your uncles and your cousins, I hope you have a lovely, warm and cozy time, because well, the best thing about Christmas, you know, I think, is actually not the presents, although they're very nice, and is not even the food, though I love the Christmas food. I think the best thing about Christmas is that you spend time with your family and you see people who you sometimes don't see in the rest of the year. And that's what makes Christmas such a happy and special time for me, and why I am so proud to play my own little part in making it happen for everybody, all the boys and all the girls and their parents all around the world every year. So happy Christmas.
Happy
Christmas.
Happy Christmas to you, Father Christmas. Does everybody want to give a big happy Christmas?
Happy Christmas.
Goodbye.
Thanks a million for joining us.
Merry Christmas, one and all.
So that was a lovely chat with Father Christmas live from the North Pole. What did you think?
Yeah.
Did you have a nice chat? Did he answer your questions? Yes. What was your favourite answer that he gave?
Probably the Rudolph one.
The Rudolph one. So there's a chance, Lyra, you might get to meet him if you go to the North Pole. What about you, Avani? What did you like about what he said?
Probably the one where he said if he was a child, then what he would put on his Christmas list.
Yeah, that was a great question. Brilliant. Asher, what did you like?
I liked how he told me a little secret.
Yeah, you got an exclusive from him as well. What about you, Seb?
I like all of them.
Ah, that's lovely. Penelope, what was
I
your...
I liked when he said he was too old and he couldn't remember.
He's so old he can't remember. Isn't that incredible? Well, you've all been absolutely brilliant. Thanks a million for coming on the Parents Show, and a happy Christmas to you all. We'll take a quick break now on the Parents Show on Mix 92.6.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
So welcome back to the Parents Show on Mix 92.6. It's great to have you with us again.
I'm Lydia El-Khoury, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Carol Bennett, who's the CEO at HFL, or Hearts for Learning Education. Carol, thanks so much for joining us on the Parents Show.
Oh, you're more than welcome, Lydia. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you on. And it's been a while since we've had you on the show. I think we both figured it's about 15 years.
It is. My children have grown enormously in that time. They're strapping young men now.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Great. OK, so in case there are listeners who haven't heard of HFL Education, tell us what exactly you do and what it does for schools and children.
Well, HFL is a really interesting concept. We were pioneering, actually, starting in 2012, but we span out of the local authority. And our job is to provide school improvement and support services to all schools, trusts and early year settings in Hertfordshire. They don't have to use us, but most choose to use us. And our job is to make them really good or outstanding schools or settings and be the very best they can be. So we do everything from supporting them with their HR, their IT, providing advice to governors. So governors, lots of your listeners will be governors. It's the largest volunteering community in the UK. And we provide support to them. But we also do everything from helping schools teach primary English better to providing support to head teachers and making sure that they know what changes are coming to their schools. But it's all about focusing on children and young people and making sure that the schools in Hertfordshire particularly are the best they can be. So many times we won't actually work directly with children, but we will work with the adults in an educational setting.
Of course, you don't need to work for children for them to benefit from your work. So you're a not-for-profit. And what does that mean in practice for parents and for children?
Well, I think it's a really exciting concept, actually, because we were formed in 2012. The local authority used to provide these kind of support services. And Hertfordshire schools were really, really good. If you look at all of the standards and all of the outcomes for children and young people, we should be really proud of the education system. But the local authority knew they couldn't provide that support anymore because it was a time of big society and the pulling back of local authority services. And rather than just stop the services, schools and our community asked us to think again about how we could maintain the support and keep them being as good as they could be, keep the family of our schools together. Because Hertfordshire, again, is really special in that it is that there's a big divide between maintained schools and academies. We all work together. We call it the family of schools, but we share ideas and practice together in between phases, between primary schools and secondary schools. So it makes it a really strong and rich community. It's one of the reasons we're really good. So schools didn't want these things to just stop, and they asked us to think of a way of preserving them. And eventually what we decided to do was spin out all of the schools bought a share in Hearts for Learning. So actually we're owned by School Settings and Trusts in Hertfordshire. We sell things that they probably could buy on the open market, but if they choose to buy it from us because we're really good, and that's my job, is to make sure things are really good, then we can operate on a not-for-profit basis. And all of the profits that would leak out of the education system go back into School Settings and Trusts. So over the last 10 years, we've moved back £1.2 million back into Hertfordshire School Settings and Trusts with free support and services. So it means that they really have a support system that's just focused on them. I'm not looking to make a profit. I'm just looking to make sure that they're as good as they can be. And they're in control of that. So they sit on my board. They tell me what services they need. It's a really wonderful ecosystem. We were the first, but actually other people have used that system too. So there are similar local, we call them local education partnerships. There's one in Haringey, one in Camden, one in Surrey. If you look at places in the UK where there are really strong schools, settings and trusts, there tends to be a local education partnership. And part of my work now is lobbying for those kind of systems nationally because they're proven and they make a difference and they keep people learning collaboratively together for children. It's a really wonderful system to be a part of.
I love the model. And it's so great. And I love your generosity of intellectual property because you've just shared that model with others for the greater good, which is it's such an admirable thing to do. That's awesome, Carol. And I love the family of schools idea. It's great. It's just there's a real heart at the centre of the work you do.
There is, absolutely. And if the things we are doing are not making a difference, we stop them. Because we're really laser focused on what we were founded to do, which is make sure that children and young people are served the best they can be in any of our local area. And so it's a really rewarding job to have, and it's a really rewarding system to work in. I did leave Hertfordshire briefly, and I was out for 4 years, and I loved the job, but I did come back because this system works really well, and it's a really rewarding place to be if you're an educator.
Brilliant. Oh, really, that's great news. And of course, for all of us who are listening in and around the Hertfordshire area, we're chuffed that this is on our doorstep and that we're lucky enough to have you develop such a successful model here. So I get the local education partnerships. So on the ground, how does that translate? Very practically, what does that look like?
Well, this is one of the reasons parents should be really pleased to be part of the system, is that in other places, you can see in the news, there are pressures on recruitment, or there are pressures with people trying to shape up their practice with their changing cohorts. So whether that be children's needs change. So we see them struggle in different areas. It was reading, now it tends to be writing. But we as a community join together. The secondary heads meet regularly, the primary heads meet regularly. We can talk about what's a challenge, and then we work out how we will solve it. So it's a system based on preventative education rather than waiting for a school to get into crisis. So in practical terms, that means that the school and the local community know what they need to deliver for their children. And all of our areas are really, really different. They will then draw up a school improvement plan, and they will then contact us to talk about what they want to drive change for. Now, it may well be that we provide SEND support for a school who's looking to develop their inclusive practice. Obviously, that's a really important area for us right now. But it may be a different school's looking to develop primary maths. We will make sure that whatever it is they're trying to do, we send them a really high quality professional. And we've been really lucky because we have this community where schools are sharing knowledge with us, and then I can share it back across the county. It's like being a bumblebee, I guess. I can move good ideas from a secondary school to a primary school. I can take ideas from York and from Sheffield and bring them back to Hertfordshire. Schools feel like they're not alone. And that's what you see in the press, is a lot of schools feeling that they're struggling because they're isolated and they're trying to learn and there isn't enough time in the day. I'm not saying it's perfect here. Our schools are feeling under a lot of pressure right now, a lot of national change, but they do have each other and they have us to bring ideas in and about. So big change in the Ofsted framework happened this term. It's a massive distraction for schools. If they don't know how that's changing, they've got to learn it all on their own. But we've rolled out a massive comms plan for that to make sure they all know what's happening. The governors know what's happening. The heads know what happened. And the reason that's important to parents is that's less distraction for all of the school staff, which means the school staff can focus back on children. That's the thing we know from school improvement. If your school staff are distracted by a building being developed in the car park or changes to national policy, when they're not looking at the children and that's not their main focus, that's when a school could wobble. And so our job is taking all of that away, making sure that we tell them what's happening in Ofsted. They don't have to learn it from themselves, but we tell them what the great practice is in Hitchin and bring it back to Watford. And they can keep their heads on their particular community and make the choices they need to have locally to make sure that their children can thrive. So that's kind of how it works in practice. It's challenging and it's busy, but it's hopefully makes a difference.
It sounds logical. First and foremost, it sounds like it makes sense. And I was interested, so you mentioned working with primary, secondary. Do you also work with nurseries, special schools, academies, independents? So every type of school.
Without wishing to paraphrase a film, wherever there are children, we'll be there. So yeah, so we work with, there's 450 childminders and PVIs, that's private, voluntary and independent nurseries in Hertfordshire. We work with those. We've got a really strong early years team. We work all the way through the phases to a school age setting. We tend not to work with FE, but if they're providing A-level education in a school setting, we work right the way across. And again, that gives us a really good ability to bridge transitions. It's really important for me that we have separate primary and English expertise and secondary English expertise, but because they work together, we're able to make sure that the transitions are covered. We know really clearly what you're expected in year six and what's expected in year seven. We provide support and guidance for that because, again, nationally, we know that wherever there are transitions, that's when children will wobble. emotionally, but also educationally. So they tend to go backwards in a transition period. Doesn't matter if that's primary to secondary or first to middle, it happens nationally. But because we've got all of that expertise, we're able to stitch together curriculum support that reduces the risk of that happening. So it is really important for us that we're able to service all of that learning and see learning in Hertfordshire as a continuous journey from birth to effectively off to university. And it, again, it seems to work. The evidence stacks up. Our children are doing really well across all of those phases. If you look at the outcome measures, Key Stage 2, Key Stage 4, Key Stage 5, and in the early years, they're doing really, really well. So that makes a really, it makes a big difference to our staff, actually, to be able to see how the next stage happens and make sure that they are really providing the best advice in their own stage.
Yeah, it's amazing to have such a breadth of stakeholders, if you like, or colleagues to work with. It's surprising, but also logical, and particularly as you say around transitions, because they can be problematic on an emotional and an academic level as well. So that's, it must be a great reassurance to teachers, to schools in the Hertfordshire area, to know that they have that kind of infrastructure or that opportunity to share best practice and learn through HFL.
I hope so. And certainly that's the view I get. I spend a lot of time visiting local clusters because, again, it should be reassuring to the parents in listening that the head teachers see themselves as part of a local community. And so there are really strong, we call them local networks, but where the heads from, say, Watford, I was there last week, primary heads of Watford all meet together and share advice and ideas and will ask me to visit with them so I can hear what it is they need from us. I think it's really reassuring for them. And I think it makes a difference because the nice thing is, again, that it's this perfect ecosystem, really they own us. So they can control where they want us to change. They hold me to account really vigorously, which when I go to the heads meetings, they tell me what support they like and what's not helping and what they need what in terms of new support. So yeah, I think it's reassuring. I think sometimes it's frustrating for them because they always know that there could be an answer if we fight hard enough together. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Oh, that's fantastic. And I'd love to hear a little bit about improvements, what you've seen across Hertfordshire, because I think we're all a bit stressed with everything that's happening in the world at the moment. And it'd be lovely just to hear a bit of good news.
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? Because we're always focusing on what we've got to do next. But there are some really, really good news stories. So our schools, as I say, if you're a Hertfordshire listener, you should be really, really proud because we track outcomes for children against East of England, because that's what the DfE region we're in, the Department for Education region. But we also check them against statistical neighbours. So the DfE provide for us a list of areas that are like us in terms of kind of demographic backgrounds. And we're at the top of the charts for all of those areas. And we are the only area in the East of England where standards are above national expectations at Key Stage 4 and Key Stage 2. So there's a consistency there that children are making progress and staying ahead of the game in Hertfordshire. We also have over 30,000 children now in a good or better school, more than there were in 2012-13. So that's 30,000 children in a better school just on that base outcome from Ofsted since 2012. So our schools are doing really, really well at keeping pace with change. There's a lot to do because children are changing, communities are changing, and our expectations are changing. So parents, understandably, I'm a parent, and I also think my children are the centre of my universe. Parents have really high expectations now for their children, and they too are hearing about great practice in other schools and wanting the best for their child. So I think it's really important to say that not only do we see these improvements in terms of outcomes for children, but our schools are continuing to evolve and know that's their job. So it's always about chasing better and not being satisfied until you can demonstrate that you meet the needs of your community today, not just yesterday, but today. So lots and lots of really great practice. And the fact that our heads and school communities still choose to meet together, I think we were at the heads conference, the secondaries, 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, and pretty much every secondary head in Hertfordshire chose to be together to make sure that they shared practice. You just couldn't dream of that elsewhere. And
amazing.
If you are then to have a challenging conversation about whether or not we're doing everything we can for children. So children on free school meals is a real concern for me. They don't make the progress that other children in Hertfordshire make. But you can only have that conversation about what shall we do as a community. It's no point one school being great and the other school not being great down the road. But to have that opportunity to say, what shall we do together, is really important. And I think there was greater attendance this year than ever before at the Secondary Heads Conference. It's really great to see community really mattering to everybody, not just parents, but also to the wider education community.
That's awesome. It's really, really lovely, lovely to hear that kind of collaboration going on. And it sounds so selfless. It sounds so ambitious and, you know, kind of really with the best interests of children at heart to facilitate and bring together those kind of voices and to thrash out the best practice.
I think that's a really important point, actually, Lydia, because I was reflecting on some of the local media, you know, and I know how difficult it is. Again, I'm both a member of the parent community and the school community. And you read the national press about, I know, attendance and the difficulties when children are ill and parents feeling under pressure to send their children to school. It's really easy when I read those headlines to see schools as bureaucratic places. But I just wanted to reflect back that often that is a national policy. So, for example, the pressure on attendance at the moment is really strong nationally, and schools are told they must do things and called into the Department for Education if they're not following up on attendance. That gets lost. So I think people can think that maybe schools have become officious, distant places. And yet that's absolutely not my experience. I see all of the leaders and all of the governors, all of this massive volunteer community in Hertfordshire, freely giving of their time and making the opportunity to collaborate, because ultimately they do really care about children and young people. We talk about exclusions again nationally. It's a really difficult thing for a child to be excluded for the parents. But I've seen heads in Hertfordshire, really experienced heads, sob because they wish it were other two, in that that's been absolutely my experience, that parents put children at the centre of their universe, rightly, but so do school leaders. And sometimes I think that gets lost in translation. So it's really nice to be on the inside and remind yourself of that every day.
Absolutely. And what you say chimes with what I see talking to, we have the privilege of talking to head teachers through our Talking Heads series on the show, and the passion and energy and tenaciousness of the heads in just finding solutions to everything is so inspiring. It really is. And I see it in my own children's school, you know, when it comes to attendance, as you mentioned, they don't just hammer it home about attendance. They explain that there is a causal link between attendance and attainment. And so they're not telling you to do it just to be a pain in the neck. They're telling you because they want your children to thrive and do the best academically that they can. And they just present the stats to us and show us that if you're in school, you'll do better. And that's the end of line, which makes complete sense. And around exclusions too, I can only imagine that it's a heartbreak for a head to have to let go, because it is a last resort. I'm sure for most heads.
For everyone involved, we understand how catastrophic it can be for everybody involved, for the parents, for the child, for the professionals. And that is one of the things that we talk about routinely. It's one of the things we talked about at the conferences. And I was at a meeting yesterday with the council talking about how best do we get early intervention in place so these things are avoided. It's not perfect yet. But again, everyone's feeding into a system with the child at the heart to try and make sure that we avoid what is a really difficult situation for everybody involved, and should always be difficult for everybody involved.
Thanks, Carol. I want to just focus on a couple of areas that you're working on, like essential writing, flexible and fluent calculators. What challenges are they designed to tackle?
Well, again, this is the nice thing about the ecosystem, is because we visit every single Ofsted outcome in all of the schools and here live, we're able to really focus on where we need to get involved to make things better for children, because we can hear themes starting to emerge. Sometimes you hear in an Ofsted visit or in a standards visit that we provide for schools, you can hear individual things a school needs to do. But when you hear a theme, that's when it's exciting, because you say, OK, we can do something about it. So one of the pathfinders for us was a programme called Reading Fluency. Parents will, if you listen to your child read, and I was in the Biff and Chip days, but you can hear your child sound out the word, because we've done a lot of phonics in schools. But you can end up with a child reading in a really staccato fashion.
Yeah.
Every word is slightly separate. And it was really holding our children back, because if you, we call it reading fluency, but if you can't read fluently with expression and in a relaxed fashion, it hampers your entire education. And so our team, because I'm lucky enough to have expert primary English teachers in our team, they devised a program called Reading Fluency, which could sit on any curriculum at any school in Hertfordshire. So it doesn't matter if they're doing little ones or phonics or letters and sounds. It doesn't matter. But in an 8-week period, they focused on how to create reading fluency in children. And within an 8-week period at Key Stage 2, so that's junior children, it was making an 18 months difference in 8 weeks. We then expanded that work to our secondary team. And actually, that has more powerful impact in Key Stage 4. So in a Key Stage 4 and an 8, that's a secondary child just about to sit their GCSEs. In an 8-week period, their reading improved by 2 years and 8 months. It's huge.
Wow, it is massive.
For us, that was critical. This was a historic issue. But obviously, if you've got a child who can't read, they're not going to do well in any exam because they just can't access the paper. If you're reading a paper word by word and not able to pull it together, you certainly can't even, it's not just about English outcomes. It's about biology. It's about chemistry. It's about history. So we've taken what we learned from the Reading Fluency Programme, which has flown in Hertfordshire. It's making a massive difference, won national awards and was then rolled out by the DfE. Again, all funded by a not-for-profit model, because we could take money that we'd earned from schools by selling things that are bought on the open market, invested it in working out how to solve the reading issue in Hertfordshire. Having done that, it would be unethical not to make that available to everybody else. So that's rolling out nationally now. We work with English Hubs on that. The new problems we're looking at are writing. And as you said, one of the programs we've got is essential writing. It's a writing scheme aimed at supporting progress, particularly in primary schools, because in 2023, 1 in 3 children weren't meeting national expectations at Key Stage 2 at junior schools. Well, again, that's a massive issue. And it's not just about English. That's about life skills. It's about employability. It's about every GCSE you sit. So the essential writing program has been developed. It's rolling out rapidly to schools in Hertfordshire and beyond, because we believe that's going to make a difference by having contexted writing for them. And we want them to love writing too. So actually, because we're passionate educators, you've seen in some areas, focusing on reading actually killed reading for children. They stopped reading for pleasure. We're absent. Reading fluency does the opposite. Because children are able to read, it gives them confidence to read. We're trying to do the same with writing. It's making writing interesting and fun. So we've got a framework rolling out there. We've also then taken the reading fluency model, and we're applying that now in maths. So again, in math, if you haven't got the foundational skills, the basic subject knowledge, you're not going to do really well at maths. And again, maths underpins many science subjects too. So we're now having a pilot. It's being trialled nationally by a body called the EEF, the Education Endowment Fund. So it's a hugely important national body, or testing a scheme we have that helps children, particularly in year 7, so after the year 6 transition, who've identified themselves as struggling at maths, is how do we get them back on track and feeling confident and in love with maths? So that program's rolling out now. It's being trialled by the EEF. It's being independently evaluated by university. I'm hoping both of those, they're at kind of different levels. Reading fluency is very established. Essential writing is rolling out across Hertfordshire, having already proven the difference it makes at the moment. And fluent and flexible calculators for maths is still just in the development stages. But all three of those, you can see, will touch a huge number of children's lives. So I think reading fluency has touched 5,000 pupils already. So the idea that we're helping 5,000 pupils fall in love with reading, or in Key Stage 4, just feel that they can open their exam paper with confidence is really exciting. So that's the kind of things we're doing all the time, is scanning around. Where are people struggling? How can we step in? What could our expert subject advisors put in place that can be dropped in a school setting to make a difference? So there's just 3 examples, really.
3 lovely examples of real world impact, actually. Yep. Isn't it? That's impact, and you can't ask for more than that. Carol, it's been so fantastic to talk to you. I could honestly chat to you for another hour, so we'll stop for now and invite you back in the new year.
Great.
Let's have another chat, because there's so much we can learn from the great work you're doing at HFL Education.
Well, and bizarrely, it would be great to talk at a future date about some of the challenges and how we're planning to move away. It's a really interesting space to be in at the moment. So I'd love to come back.
Thanks a million, Carol. That's Carol Bennett, CEO of HFL Education.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.